And as you do lie on your back, turn your attention to your breath. And in the low belly, within the territory of the pelvis, especially the broad pelvis with the wings or the elephant ears, the wide ilia, the front of the sacrum, behind the soft tissues, the pubic bone. And then mentioning the sitting bones, where does your imaging take you? What do you image? Just the bottoms, where we sit and where we find for pushing upward? Or from these days, is there attention that goes somewhere to the back, which usually would be buttocks, right? We lose the bones there, and you can sense the tissue of the buttocks somehow against the floor, but within them are the backs of the sitting bones, and eventually it's possible to create an image of not just, or to really fill it in, so you have the sense of the small pelvis as a whole, not just represented by bits of bone here and there. But it can't happen just through sensation. There has to be some sort of image and concept idea of it. So anyway, within that bony nest, as just the second before the inhalation begins, do you find that there's an expansion? And forward may be the clearest to sense, if anything is clear to sense for many, many that remember the first many times when attention was drawn to the lower belly and expansion that was not really clear at all. So forward may be the primary, but then again, you can bring in the image, which is a kind of a concept. It's a thought, a construct of a balloon or that self expands. You don't have to push air into it the way you would into an actual balloon. It sort of self expands, which of course then allows the air to rush in. And then from there, perhaps that spreads. Sometimes the spreading, the wave of that is broader, sometimes it's smaller, into the higher parts of the trunk. And when you give attention to the expansion in the chest, do you just do it in the major territory of the chest, or do you also put your attention into some of the smaller places, some of the more distant corners. They're rounded corners, but, you know, way up underneath the clavicles and up into the first rib, which actually sits behind the clavicle and backward. Not, again, to make anything happen. Sometimes we do that with breathing. Sometimes we actively expand and actively contract. But this is just reminding, with attention, reminding yourself of the territory. And eventually that might be included in an expansion. An expansion might move there, but it might not. But you can still be aware of the territory. And territory means distances, so there's some kind of distance between the front and back of the breastbone. I mean, the back of the breastbone and the front of the spine. And there might be places where you know there has to be space between the back of the breastbone and the front of the spine, but damned if you can feel it. Might be able to have a concept of it, but not a sensation. So it's always some kind of an interesting play between the image, which I also call a concept, and sensations. So would you lie on the right side and look around for something small to put under your head if you'd like or need. And the knees are in their more usual orientation, the legs are in their more usual orientation, which is bent at the knee, bent at the hip joint. And before I suggest a movement, the below the knee and above the ankle, somewhere in the middle of the lower leg, is where you're going to be holding your legs. So you will bring your left leg somehow closer to your chest so that you can reach it with the hand to the middle of the lower leg. But the whole leg stays parallel to the floor. The whole leg stays parallel to the floor. And you can adjust the amount of bending in the right leg to make all this easier for yourself. And you can also kind of think like, why didn't I think of that? It's funny, some of the things we don't think of, or we don't know if they're allowed, I presume. Put your leg back where it was, your arm. And then you'll do that again, but this time paying attention about how much you disturb, or he uses the word mobilize, how much you disturb the chest, the trunk. What do you do with the trunk, right? Again, very often we do something with the distal parts, and then we just let the proximal parts kind of take care of themselves. Unless, of course, you have pain, in which case you tend to be more attentive. So do that several times. Do that several times so that you can find out how you can do both, which means both bring the knee, the leg closer to yourself, and reach down towards it with the most light, pleasant, and soft experience through the chest, through the back, sorting out what you do with your head. So the left leg is not on the floor. Once you're holding it, it's in the air. And again, one more time, put it down. And stay like that with the leg just resting, the arm somewhere resting. And in this position, begin to attend to the lower belly. You could use one word for that, an oriental word, tangjian. So with that same curiosity or the same question of is that the what happens just before there's air coming in? Is there already some expansion? Does the balloon begin to self-inflate with some parts of that imagined and some parts of that actually sensed? And then, of course, it's not just that. There's a spreading that has to happen, expansion in the chest, because that's actually where the lungs are. So that doesn't expand. You don't get much into yourself. And without disturbing that self-regulated, self-appearing breathing, would you again reach for the lower leg and then hold it parallel like that to the floor and begin to move in such a way that the knee goes a little bit closer to your chest, your stomach, somewhere in your front, and then it moves away. So it clearly it won't be a straight line. It'll go up and towards you, then it'll go down and away from you. And you notice if you begin to roll a little bit backward or forward, and then you find out whether you can not roll backward. Not roll backward. Do something other than roll backward. Do something other than roll backward. And you're moving softly and finely. Are you, however, giving an ongoing, that means without interruption, attention to the passage of breath, to the sometimes expansion, sometimes not as expansion of the belly and the trunk? So make that actually be primary. That's the primary listening. And the movement is, it's the movement, but it's a little bit to find out if you can, in spite of movement, give first attention to the breath. Okay, leave that, stay on your side. There is the question of really where to hold the hand. So it's not just below the knee, because that it will be possible then to bring the knee closer to the chest, but it's going to make it difficult to take the knee any distance further away from the chest. And it's not at the ankle, not quite that low. But find another, use another place next as you take your leg again, while. So I would say it's closer to the ankle than it is to the knee. Arrange your other leg in any way you need to be able to do that. And continue. So the knee comes closer and goes backward. Don't disturb your breathing. Just the easy part. And what are you moving the leg in relation to? Is it the chest? Or in some parts of the face? And you can do anything. I know I said to move the knee. The knee moves in an arc, but it's a consequence of much else. It's a consequence of the whole of yourself. So the movement of the head is not disallowed. The movement of the breastbone is not prohibited. The movement of the left hip joint is highly encouraged. At some point, it may become clear that the whole pelvis moves, not just the left half of it. So somehow the right side of the pelvis moves in relation to maybe the floor, maybe the right leg. And it becomes quite different when the self-imposed inhibitions, so to speak, are removed. So the head is not, it's not disallowed to make the head an important part, not just a small part. And leave all that lie on your back. Lie on your left side, and before you proceed to the active movement, observe the area of the lower belly and create the concept of an expansion, whether with a balloon or not, that goes in many directions. Within the lower belly, but then the expansion as it continues somehow, somewhat restricted by the floor on the left, but maybe therefore more sensed where there's a floor to reflect the expansion, maybe not. And moving in a way that does not disturb, doesn't stop, doesn't startle, doesn't take away your attention, you reach for, you both bring the leg towards the arm and the arm towards the leg. And just notice that as you do bring the arm towards the leg, do you already do something with the shoulder, with the chest, with the head, or not? So depends how much the leg moves and how much the arm moves. And then hold a little bit lower than the halfway point, I think is a good one. And start to move in such a way that the knee describes an arc in space. And the arc is not restricted. You're not restricted to a small territory. You're just, for the moment, searching only in the easy territory, in the light and easy. And beware of thinking of this as just something that the leg does. So the not rolling backward, but there's some kind of a what backward, softening backward of various parts of yourself all along the spine. And The head, if you don't do anything, it may roll, right? It may roll, but then that means you're probably rolling a little bit. So how, is there any way that you could actually direct the head? Do something softly active, so that the knee, as it comes upward, if you maybe begin to slightly bring some part of your face, chin or the lips, or just a little bit, so that somehow round parts of your back in such a way that it's easier to carry the knee forward and, I'm sorry, backward towards yourself and upward. But it's kind of an interesting question. Why does the knee not go any lower? Why does the knee not go any further away from the chest? That's not an invitation to push it further. That's not a reprimand. That's not like, why is that knee not going further away? Which really means like, oh, you mean should it be? Just why not? What? Have you lost the breath as the primary way of listening to yourself? And lie on your back. And while you're lying on your back and finding again the lower belly and the proceedings that go on once they start, in addition to that, think of maybe actually bend your knees, put your feet on the floor, and think on the distance from the knee along the front of the thigh to the hip joint. What is the distance if you were to measure it really and track it from the knee to the hip joint, the front? And then what would be the distance from the knee to the hip joint but from behind? In other words, traveling along the back of the leg. And it doesn't have to be like a distance just with a thread. You can really think of the whole back of the leg somehow, if you'd like. And what is the length, really, of that femur, is what we're asking, from the side of the knee to the hip joint? And lastly, what is the distance, the length, from the inside through the groin and into the hip joint? And it's possible that conceptually you know that your leg has to be the same length from all four sides, but in the self-experience, which I think sometimes we call self-image, but it's kind of in the self-experience, one of those or some of those might be shorter. And for many, the leg sort of ends where the adductors attach into that ridge of bone. And Moshe says it's about 10 centimeters you have to go deeper than the muscles to actually find the hip joint. So just kind of go over the four sides until you can somehow grow the shorter angles to be the same, the shorter lengths to be the same as the long ones. And then do the same with the other thigh. So start on one of the four sides from the knee to the hip joint. And then go to a second perspective. And a third perspective. And of course the fourth one. And then here again, from all four sides. And if it seems to you that actually all four distances are the same, that's fine. See how many of the four perspectives you can hold in your attention at the same time. So that the leg is like has all of its volume, its dimension. And then, would you please roll again to your right side. Bring your lower leg, bring your whole leg, hold your lower leg, and maybe now a little bit lower than the middle, a little bit lower than the middle, so a little bit closer to the ankle, a little bit closer to the ankle with the left hand. And continue the same of bringing the knee towards the chest and away, but in addition to listening to the breath as that which you wish to not interrupt and always have in the foreground, you also listen to the four perspectives, the four sides of the left thigh, as you carry your whole self through space. And it's not rolling, right? Not rolling. So a lot, and actually maybe carrying your head somewhat actively in the whole direction that helps the action of bringing the knee towards the chest, bringing the knee away from the chest. And when you have the four lengths of the left thigh, can you add the four lengths of the right one, but very clearly seeking out the hip joint from the knee as a distance or as a plane, or obviously the leg is round, so maybe as kind of a partial tube. So allowing the breath to continue uninterrupted, unimpeded, and finding where would the foot go in space so that the knee can go down lower. Where would the pelvis, where would the belly be? Where would the breastbone go? Not where would they be, but where would they go? Where would, without losing the breath, without losing the eight lengths, four on one thigh, four on the other. Your head may stay on the floor. It doesn't have to stay on the floor. It can sometimes be on the floor, sometimes not. And leave that, please. And again, lying your back and rest. Whichever perspectives on whichever leg are harder to keep when you're moving them, this is a good moment to use the image to create a sensations, or to create presence for attention. Roll to the left side. And again, a little bit below the middle of the lower leg, somewhere somewhat closer to the ankle. Not yet at the ankle, but closer to the ankle. So the movement happens. Your direction doesn't happen. You make it happen. But primarily your attention is with the breath, but starting really low. And of course, when the breath, when you listen for the expansion really low, it's as if you're listening to the hip joints from inside the pelvis. So the movement focuses the attention in the hip sockets, and the breath somehow speaks to the inside of the pelvis, the inside walls of the hip sockets. And again, if this is the leg is that which is really moving through space a lot, but each leg has four perspectives. And you look to equalize them first on the moving leg. Particularly interested in the parts of that line or distance that get lost. And there's a big promise that Moshe makes, that if you really find all four, especially the one on the inside, in the adductors, that the leg will move eventually almost like by itself. And then the four perspectives on the other leg, the one that you're, and take all the pauses that you need. Maybe that you wish to do only two or three movements and take a pause and then come back to it. There's no good reason to tire yourself. And all four lengths, all four distances on the left leg, because the pelvis has to move in relation to that femur. So locating the hip joint from all four sides will also constantly distinguish, constantly bring you to the fact that some of the pelvis is above the hip joints and some of the pelvis is below the hip joints. And the part of the pelvis moving above the hip joints moves in one direction, and the part below the hip joint constantly is moving in the opposite direction. And your head, you can move it, or you can just allow it to do whatever it chooses, but you can also begin to carry it actively and rest on your back. Roll to your right side. You hold again, just a bit below the halfway point, halfway between the knee and the ankle. Lift the leg just parallel, yeah, of course. And don't bring it to the chest, and don't take it away from the chest. Just lift it from the other leg, so it's, and then begin to turn it so that the knee goes to the ceiling. The knee goes to the ceiling, and then the knee returns. So the knee goes to the ceiling, but as the knee goes to the ceiling, of course you could roll towards the back. Right? You could be rolling towards the back. But if you don't roll towards the back, and bring the knee to the ceiling, you have to think about where to bring the foot. So the knee goes to the ceiling, and at the same time you think of bringing the foot a little bit forward as if it's going to go in the direction of the, goes to of the left of the right knee. So which way is forward? Forward in front of your belly. So in other words, the knee goes, you could say it goes left, and then it goes right. But the foot goes a little bit opposite. Some of you are making such a large movement that it's going to be really hard to... So the knee doesn't come closer to your chest. It stays the same distance from your chest, and it just makes a small movement of pointing to the ceiling and then not pointing to the ceiling. But the foot also swings a little bit back and a little bit forward. The foot swings, and you swing it. And you can even make the movement fast a few times so that you really get that feeling. But less and less rolling, so it's not an action of the whole pelvis and the whole trunk, but more and more just really looking for a distinction in the hip joint. Rest on your side a moment. Rest on your side. So for those for whom such words have meaning, it's a bit of an external and internal rotation in the femur while holding the leg. So take again your left leg, and if you want to be holding closer to the ankle, if you need to bring both knees closer to the chest to make that possible, so the placement of the right leg, the placement of the resting leg is always at your discretion. It's always you who can experiment with that without me needing to say that to you. So stay on your side. Stay on your side. It's, if possible, stay on your side and just see if you can make this movement of. And by the way, now it's getting clearer for many people. So can you have the image that the heel kind of swings in relation to the left sitting bone? But the left sitting bone somehow also travels in the same way as the left heel. If you think of the sitting bone as being the heel of the pelvis, the heel of the pelvis and the heel of the foot, but without rolling onto your back. Yeah, much clearer. And rest on your back. Again, roll to the right side. And it'll be the same action, but we will give more layers to the attention. So, still on the same side, staying on the right side. Take your leg lower than halfway down. Lift it parallel. And again, reminding you one last time, I never will again, about the right leg. You're on your own from here, where the right leg is. And you start again to take the knee left and right, paying attention to the movement of the heel, as well as to the whole leg, the whole thigh, from the knee, from all four perspectives into the hip joint. An interesting thing. What is the benefit of using the same image again and again and again? Not just once, found it, move on to the next thing. But found it, ooh, deepen it. Yeah, that's it. And then there's maybe a clarity. Greater clarity of the movement of the femur in that hip joint, now that you have it surrounded from all four sides, you're looking into the hip joint. And then, if you need, you take pauses. Otherwise, you now give attention to the right leg. Okay, maybe take a pause. tiring enough. Just stay on the side, though. And perhaps while you're even resting, give attention to the right leg from all four directions. From the inside, from the backside, the outside, and the front side, but very specifically into the hip joint. You're in the same territory as the breathing of the lower belly. In the same neighborhood, close neighbors, just separated by one little wall of the hip socket. And take your left leg again, your left leg again, same action, and the attention now goes to how does the pelvis move in relation to the right leg? How does the sitting bone, how do the sitting bones move in relation to the right femur? High up in the hip joint, from the knee, from all four sides, how does the pubic bone move in relation? How does the tailbone, the coccyx, move in relation? Don't forget that the chest, the head, the shoulder, somehow something has to happen between the shoulder blades and the base of the neck, because the arm itself has to have different lengths depending where you are. Yeah. Great. Lie on your back. And roll to your left side. Roll to your left side. And of course take your right leg, and you don't bring it to any more to the chest than you need to reach for it. Keep it at that distance and not yet at the ankle, still higher than the ankle, somewhere halfway, a little bit lower than halfway. And set your attention into the belly from the perspective of the breath and from the perspective of the four lengths of the four perspectives, four planes of the right thigh. And the more specific that we can be, the more benefit there is, I think. So begin to take the knee to the ceiling, which means to the right, without pulling it towards your chest. So maybe in the beginning it's a extraordinarily tiny movement that is barely visible, if at all. But your attention, the movement can stay small, but your attention can stay and become larger and larger. So you have, where does the heel travel through space? Where is the heel in relation to the knee at any given moment as you continue not just to breathe, but to really give attention to the start and the ongoing expansion from the belly? And where is the pelvis in relation to all the four dimensions of the left leg? specifically into the left hip joint. And the pelvis itself is all parts nameable and unnameable. So maybe now the two sitting bones and the pubic bone and the sacrum and the coccyx no longer have to be named one at a time. But so when the knee opens, the foot goes forward. When the knee goes to the right, the foot goes forward. And you have to start from the leg parallel, that's it. So the minute that the knee starts going to the ceiling, the foot starts turning as if you're going to stand on it on the floor. As if you're going to, so the, that's it, the sole. The sole goes, but at the same time, you also find out if you can swing it forward. That way you, there you find that it's maybe swing is too big a word. Good. And you may roll a little bit, but it's a very small rolling that doesn't substitute for the movement in the hip joints, but comes out of the movement of the hip joints and the pelvis. And rest again on your back. On the left side again, take your leg a little bit below the midway, the halfway point, leave it parallel to the floor, and now again all of the ground is the same, the attention to breath in the pelvis, the attention to each thigh from all four perspectives. But now, see if you can organize the movement from the heel. So where would you move the foot, really? The heel is as a leading point of the foot. So don't flex the ankle or anything like that. You leave the foot soft, don't have to flex the ankle. But you organize the movement from the heel. From the heel. And allow yourself to follow that slight rolling impulse, especially when the heel goes, what shall we call it, backward. And if it were to go further, imagine that the heel might actually, the foot might start pointing to the ceiling. But for that, you may need to follow the rolling that would go which way. For the heel to go to the ceiling, would you be rolling backward or forward? For the heel to go to the ceiling. More likely forward. So allow that. And notice then that the heel, the foot does go more to the ceiling, the knee goes more to point towards the floor. And then the other way, when the heel returns from the ceiling and kind of goes towards the floor and goes forward, you can allow the rolling to take you a bit back. And of course you let the head go with, and the head can stay on the floor, but it absolutely doesn't need to. Every once in a while you might be able to lift it if you'd like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And rest on your back. Roll to your left side. Is that where you've just been?
Mm-hmm.
Then don't. Roll to your right side. And, yeah, roll to the right side so that you can organize this movement from the heel. We organized it. On this side, we organized it. We followed where the heel was in space, but we didn't use the heel as the leader. Use the heel as the leader. But everything that you lose, you create again in terms of your attention. And that through this whole passage of the rolling of the pelvis and the chest, which starts from the heel, the needs of the heel. You meet the needs of the heel. And all the time, the breath, no matter where the belly is, no matter where the chest is. And you listen, when does the chest respond, need to respond? How you, somebody on the first day mentioned letting go in the upper belly. Rolling over the ribs, and the all four sides of each leg, all two sitting bones, all the width of the pubis, the back of the sitting bones, the coccyx, and somehow the head, which can stay on the floor, doesn't have to stay on the floor, can be sometimes on the floor, sometimes lifted, that somehow you find, where can I take the head to make it clear or easier for, where is it least clear in the spine for you, in the chest? Somewhere maybe between the shoulder blades or at the base of the neck? Where could you take the head? Where could you take the head so that it would be maybe clearer for the, even the shoulder, even the left shoulder, where would it be clear for the left shoulder? If the head was more forward, if the head was more back, if the head was a little bit turned, if it wasn't turned. Nothing is prohibited except not searching. That is now sternly prohibited. Okay, lie on your back and rest. Lie on whichever side you'd like. We're returning now to the original movement, so of bringing the knee towards the chest and away in an arc. So you lie whichever side you'd like first. And again, take the leg a little lower than halfway. Lower than halfway, and telegram. I send you a telegram of reminders. Lower belly, middle belly, chest. 4 lengths of each leg. And a head that you forget about at your own peril. So, how and where can your attention be, and how and where can your head be, so that your knee could go lower and lower, and might even imagine that it's really so down that you could kneel on that knee, that you could kneel on that knee. Where would your belly, all your bellies, your lower bellies, your middle ones, your upper one need to be? Your chest, and yes, your head. Your head. And between your head and your pelvis, in addition to there being your chest, there also be your shoulder. What would be the relationship between your breastbone and your shoulder? Your clavicle, your shoulder blade, so that the knee could go down, really down, which really is saying, where will your arm be if your knee is going to be down in line? Will your whole arm be in front of your trunk? Will your arm be along the side of your trunk? Or will your arm be behind your trunk? Or will your trunk be in front of your arm or behind your arm? It depends whose perspective you take. And maybe your head will no longer be in the floor. You're allowed to lift it. You're allowed to roll forward as if onto your belly, but not onto your belly completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paws on your back. So, of course, in ATMs, we are often told precisely where each body part needs to be. But in life, we don't really have that voice telling us. So, it seems like in life, we kind of have to figure it out a bit more ourselves. And roll to the other side. Read the same telegram that was sent to you moments ago. When does the top of your head already participate in attention? First, it has to participate in the attentional field. If it's not in the attention, then you're in trouble. And then, if it's not in the image of the movement, you're also in a bit of trouble. And it's kind of like the timing. Do you begin to do something with the head when it gets in the way of the whole movement? Or do you begin to carry the head someplace when? It's the timing thing. And in order to really take the knee downward. And we can keep thinking also, like I was saying, the belly, the trunk, the breastbone, but in relation to what? Forward. But then if you carry the shoulder forward with it, then is that helpful? Or does the shoulder need to move? Or does the chest have to move really forward, even way in front of the shoulder blade? It's not like you have to take the shoulder blade backward, maybe. Maybe you need to take the chest. Somebody could come and give you a good impulse through the ribs. Where would that be? And there, to take the knee downward, that pelvis has to really move intelligently on all four sides of your lying leg. Rest on your back. Rest on your back. And would everybody please lie on the left side, but not just lying on the side, but you're leaning on your left hand. So that means the head is leaning on the left hand, but the whole left upper arm is on the floor. It's like you're going to read a book or talk to your neighbor. You're not having a nap. No napping. Your head is off the floor. Your head is off the floor, like you're going to watch television or something. Yeah? But don't lean on the top of the elbow. Lean as much. So you have to have quite a bit of openness here. To that end, we have done some ATMs. Yeah, good. And reach, of course, arrange your legs so that it makes sense to reach for the right ankle. Now you reach the ankle. Now finally you reach the ankle. But the where the left leg is going to be important for balance. For balance. So, and for the, anyway, bring the right knee towards yourself and away from yourself. So bring the right knee in an arc and then take it as far down and back as you can. And notice that you have decided that the support of your upper arm and your head, well, not everybody has, but many people have fixed it. You're treating it as a support on which you cannot roll. But you are allowed to roll. You're allowed to roll somehow on the left forearm, and you're allowed to have a wrist, which means that you're allowed to find how your head can move in space, but staying still really up there, not going to the floor, not going towards the floor. So if the knee is going, when the knee goes down, and maybe even behind, where does the head go? Where does the head go? What needs to happen? What needs to be allowed in the middle back? Between the shoulder blades. What can you allow between the shoulder blades? So that the head can go back and maybe you can actually even look a little bit in a funny direction. It's like, how would I describe it? It's not really quite up at the wall above you and it's not to the ceiling. It's at some kind of funny angle that is 45 degrees to something. And just note, where can you perhaps soften even more in the inner thighs, especially in the inner thigh of the left leg, so that you can look a little bit, it's not really forward, it's a little bit, try to look a little bit upward. Try various directions until you feel like, I couldn't put words on this because there are too many dimensions. But if the head is going to go back, then some major parts of you better go forward to counterbalance. So, breastbone, chest, and maybe you begin to find that somehow the leg, when the wherever it's moving, can go to a place where the sacrum gives you a push upward through the spine. Rest on your side, or actually rest on your back, that's fine. And one more time, roll to the left side. Support yourself as you just have with your head. Reach to the ankle, lengthen your leg, and stay with it down as if you were kneeling. The left leg, you, the right leg like this. And now, with the leg long, begin to turn it so that the knee goes to the ceiling. The knee goes to the ceiling, and then the knee goes back to its original place. So you don't do as little as possible you bring it to the chest. As little as possible you bring it to the chest. It's crazy, but it's doable. I think if you, oh, giggly one, I think if you bring, if you bend your left knee a little bit more, you'll have better balance. If your left leg is too long, then you have a narrower surface for balancing. So keep the leg long, like you're kneeling. You're kneeling. It's going to be the tiniest movement, but you'll find something. Keep it to the ceiling and turn it. That's it. Yeah, good. That's it. There you go. Excellent. Voila. Good. And keep it long so it doesn't come in front of your chest. But don't make it just about the hip joint. So fine. What do the ribs do? Because actually, what the chest can do, again, if you don't fix the left elbow, you don't fix the left forearm, you don't fix the ribs on the left side to the floor, and you dare let your head move through space. And in particular, if you find a good direction for the head to move through space, you actually are using this action to maybe find something even more profound in the vertebra of the chest. But the head needs to turn, go a little bit back, tilt a little bit. You know, there are so many dimensions that the head can take. So, voila, good. Rest on your back. So the only irrelevant joints in this whole action might be the toes of the resting leg. Maybe the ankle of that leg, or the knee, but certainly the hip joint of that leg that's on the floor, but every single vertebral joint is of significance. The sleepers and the snoozers of the vertebral column are invited. So lie on the right side, and of course you support yourself with the right hand. And first as you take the leg, you take it at the ankle and you bring it forward and back. And he says, you know, don't try to increase the movement, but improve your attention. Then the movement will increase by itself. So do that and return each time more clearly, more easily, and more simply. So you pay attention to the length of each limb from or towards the hip joint, deep in the thighs, which is really right behind the breathing tendon. The breathing tendon and the moving hip joints reunited at last. And the long distance from, especially on the inside, so you're lying on the right side, kind of the same thing. The long distance of the inner thighs, which doesn't end where the flesh ends, doesn't end at the underwear. It goes really quite high, and at the thigh and the head going backward together. And he said, as the thigh goes backward, the thigh goes backward, and you go forward. You find how the leaning changes on the pelvis, on the ribs, and on the arm, on the right arm. And there's a kind of, because your head is fixed in space, I mean, in some ways it's fixed and in some ways it's not fixed, but it can't go forward as much or backward as much. So you have to find more of a turn inside, a particular twist of the spine, he says. Because you're sort of trying to lie in the stomach, but you can't because your head is high. So keep encouraging behind the breastbone the thought that more could emerge. But watch your eyes that they follow the head, and then in fact maybe they even lead the head a little bit, not too much, not in a way that brings the shoulder forward. The chest to go forward between the shoulder blades. Forward between the shoulder blades. Dare. Maybe even open your mouth a little bit. Maybe even go. So all those vertebrae in the back of the throat can. Yeah. And the opening on the whole right side from the elbow to the hip joint. Rest on your back. And on the right side, leaning on the right hand. When or are you already giving attention to the lower belly? And this time the leg lengthens downward. So more important than anything else is the movement of the tendon. And it's wild because it's moving in the response to the breathing, but it's also moving forward and backward in space. So you have the movement from within, and then you have the movement of the pelvis and the whole skeleton. So you have another kind of movement, which is the movement of the bony home of the tendon, and both make the whole. So the leg stays long, and now you take the heel. You can think of it as the heel moving through space. You're holding the ankle, right? Holding the ankle, but following the movement of the heel through space. But the thigh stays long. And the limb through the inside of the thighs, therefore also the right one. And you'll know whether your rolling forward and back is just right, because you won't need to kick in the muscles of the inner thigh on the right leg. The moment you feel them kick in, somehow you haven't rolled either enough forward, enough back, or enough in relation of the pelvis moving in relation to the head. Some heads have stopped moving.
What is kick-in?
Oh, kick-in, start working.
Oh.
Sorry, yeah. All of a sudden, jump in. Yeah, jump in. Mm-hmm. So the neck as well, the neck. It's going to be really hard for the head to move unless the neck does. So the neck somehow has a relation to the shoulder, which has a relation to the pelvis, which has a relation to the spine between the shoulder blades, which has a relation to how you can roll over the high ribs on the right side. If your elbow is too much forward and not in a line with your spine, it's going to be really hard to roll on it. So for some, the elbow needs to go a little further back. And to that end, we worked with the ATM yesterday. Remember the arm going around in a circle behind? Does linking into that help? And eyes, some of you are steadfastly fixed forward. Steadfastly fixed forward. The eyes move in strange arcs as well. Yes. And maybe you've already found that when all of that comes together, this movement of the pelvis, which is a widening between the two sitting bones and a going back of the two sitting bones, gives you a support up through the spine. So you get a little longer as you do all this without anyone having to be imagined pushing on the sitting bones. Once it's real, it doesn't have to be imagined. Lie on your back. And I will just stop my talking and leave you really your own pace.